This is the download edition of the Wall Street Update of World Business Report on Thursday, January the 22nd. I'm Dominic Laurie. So what about the view from the US on the creation of all this money by the European Central Bank? You remember that's a decision that the US Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, made many years ago when it actually finished its program at the end of last year. It was a $4.5 trillion program in the US. The UK and Japan also carrying out similar things. Here's Carrie Leahy from Decision Economics.
Well, obviously the effect of the weaker euro is a hope of taking a quite weak economy and help it by boosting exports, by making the value of their exports cheaper and making imports more expensive. So it really is partly due to the weakness in the economy, and perhaps more so to all that's been going on with the ECB, with the announcement of quantitative easing and markets preparing themselves for that eventuality.
Are you worried about your big companies? Are you worried about the big U.S. companies and their export potential?
It's not yet a problem because in the U.S. about 20% of output is allocated to exports, so firms are enjoying the fact that the U.S. economy is doing reasonably well, but most forecasts, including my own, do have quite a bit of sogginess in the export sector this year because of the fall in value of the euro and other currencies against the dollar.
Sogginess, I haven't heard that before. That's great. We'll add that to the dictionary. I've just seen a report today which suggests that a whole range of commodities, the nine major commodities, if you exclude things like gold, oil, and natural gas, might decline in value in 2015. What do you think? That's a World Bank forecast, so it seems relatively heavyweight. What's your view?
Well, I think that forecast is true. While it may reflect the fact that we've already had big price declines that will spill over to this year, meaning that the drop happened mainly in 2014, but you'll see it numerically in 2015, but it's really representative of the fact that the global growth story is quite disappointing. You probably need global growth of about 4% per year to keep commodity prices about where they are, a little bit higher. And with global growth expected to be 3% or even less, and in particular the huge gobbler of commodities the last 5 years has been China, and their growth rate has been halved in the last 3 to 5 years, that overall sogginess in the global growth story and the big slowdown in China is just wreaking havoc with commodity prices. So this is the first time this has happened since probably the Asian crisis in 97 or 98. And you may have to go back to the mid-80s before you ever had a situation where virtually every major commodity group was down for the year.
We've got concerns in Latin America. Canada's cut its interest rates. Ebola still an issue in Africa. Problems in the Middle East. Sluggishness in the Eurozone. Slowing China. Can the U.S. be insulated from the world's problems?
Well, the answer is how low do you find a growth rate that's equal to survival? But I would think the U.S. economy, while it might not remain an oasis of prosperity, to steal a phrase from a previous Federal Reserve chairman, it could grow, I'd say, 2% or better, even if things got awfully dicey overseas. Once again, if the U.S. is only allocating about 20% of its output, which is still significant, but only 20% to export activity, we can see a further deterioration of our export position, but still grow about 2%. That might not be very good, and it's clearly at least a percentage point slower than how the economy currently feels, but we could at least slog through it, but we wouldn't be smiling as that happened.
Carrie Leahy there. Let's go through some of the rest of the market numbers. The Dow was up 1.5% today, quite a big rise, 17,813. London up 1% at 6,796, so obviously reacting to this huge quantitative easing stimulus in Frankfurt at the European Central Bank. Gold trading upwards, $1,302 an ounce. Crude oil down $1.26, perhaps reflective of the fact that so much quantitative easing is needed. Doesn't suggest that the world economy, or the European economy indeed, is in such great shape. Football finance next. It's always an interesting topic. There's some big money, isn't it, now in football? We're a few days into the Africa Cup of Nations, and already some of England's biggest clubs are missing some of their star players. They're playing in Africa. Would Manchester City have lost to Arsenal at the weekend if they'd had Yaya Toure anchoring the midfield? However, despite the temporary pain, they're still in good financial health. Half of the top 30 richest clubs in the world are now English Premier League sides. Manchester United may have had their worst season on the pitch for two decades last year, but they've reclaimed second spot in the list of football's richest clubs. Only the European champions Real Madrid stand ahead in terms of income. Tom Cannon is a football finance expert at Liverpool University in the northwest of England. I asked him how United was still doing so well money-wise.
Manchester United are, in some ways, the ideal model for not just English football clubs, but international football clubs, because basically they have three powerful revenue streams. And the one that's grown the fastest, despite their disappointing performances on the field, has been international commercial revenue. The deals that they've cut with big-name sponsors, which have been largely driven by the international marketplace, but also their ability to develop commercial deals all around the world, particularly through the development of academy programs and that kind of work in Asia and in parts of Africa and increasingly in North America. So what you're seeing is dollar revenues there actually growing faster than their domestic gate income. But you can turn around and say, well, they're a $600 million business, but possibly on the way to becoming perhaps the first billion-dollar football business. And it's been neck and neck between them and Real Madrid. They've just got this enormous fan base. And if you're an American company that wants to reach into Asia, if you're a British company that wants to reach into Asia, and they're also making increasing progress in Africa, and, of course, getting a bigger franchise in Eastern Europe as well. In all the football growth markets, Manchester United are actually growing faster commercially than anybody else.
Manchester United have swapped place with Barcelona, but if you look at the rest of the list, it's almost depressing to a certain extent, Tom, how static it is. Bayern still third, Paris Saint-Germain still fifth, Man City still sixth, Chelsea seventh, Arsenal eighth. No one seems to move. Everything seems to be locked now in a pattern. And you can say that for the English game, can't you? It's the same four teams that always finish in the top four. I mean, have we sort of fossilised a bit?
No, we haven't, actually. The big effect has been the remarkable decline of Italian football clubs. Because what we've seen, for example, and quite interestingly, you've got clubs like Swansea City, Stoke City, going up the rankings in terms of revenue, while clubs like Roma, Benfica, who won European championships, national championships, they're the ones who are declining. And it's a vivid illustration of the impact of television revenues, because actually it's the way that television revenues are distributed in the English Premiership, which is allowing less well-known clubs globally, like Swansea City, like Stoke City, to grow at the expense, in a sense, of global historic giants like Roma, Benfica, and quite a few of the other Italian clubs. And that's the biggest. Of course, you mentioned
they can only do that, can't they, Tom, because of the way that the money in the English game is distributed. It's actually quite egalitarian, isn't it? Stoke City and Swansea City, they get a pretty good chunk, not quite as much as Manchester United, but they still get in the tens of millions, and that's part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. What you're talking about in the English Premier League is the fact that the team that comes top gets a multiplier of about 1.6 times the revenue from television income of the team that comes bottom. Whereas in the Italian League, it's more like 6-1, and in the Spanish League, it's more like 9-1. The other factor, of course, in the Spanish League and in the Italian League even more so is actually the problems of gate income, because what's happened in Italy is not only have the television income not grown as fast as the English Premiership, but actually gate income has been affected, and they are much more dependent on the TV income and increasingly suffering from the fact that their gate income is declining.
That's Tom Cannon there on the inexorable rise of English football versus other countries in Europe.